Good evening, everyone. Thank you for being with us this evening for this special edition of NEPR's News and Brews series, Springfield's Big Gamble. Some of you may remember we did some of these series during the 2016 election year, and we'll probably be doing some more. In fact, we may do a news and cannabis series next, so that's another subject. I'm Martin Miller. I'm Martin Miller, CEO and General Manager of New England Public Radio. I want to thank our host, Valley Venture Mentors, and Elegant Affairs for pouring the brews tonight, and there's still brew available. If you're unfamiliar with Valley Venture Mentors, it's an organization helping startups transform their ideas into sustainable business models. They asked us to let you know that they are now accepting applications for their mentorship program. And you can see Stephanie Kirby, their program manager, for more details. And Stephanie, can we see you? There's Stephanie. See her for more details. NEPR is happy to host this community conversation, bringing together this group of reporters who cover this important beat over a beer to talk about this big story and the stories behind it. MGM in Springfield will certainly have a lasting impact on the economy, the culture, and the future of Western New England. Conversations like these are an essential part of our public service mission. NEPR is better able to serve as an authentic voice for our region by bringing people together to discuss issues that are important to all of us. So thank you for being part of this conversation, and thank you for joining us again. And we are recording tonight's conversation and Q&A for possible use by our newsroom. Our host tonight for this conversation is John Denkowski. He is the executive editor of the New England News Collaborative, an eight-station consortium of public media newsrooms that includes New England Public Radio. He also hosts Next, a weekly program about New England that's carried on stations all over the region, including the NEPR News Network at 6 p.m. on Saturdays and 10 a.m. on Sundays. Previously, John served as Vice President for News for Connecticut Public Media. He also hosted the talk show Where We Live and is a regular fill-in on Science Friday. And for some reason, it hasn't been explained to me, he's a Pittsburgh Pirates fan. So without further ado, we're going to hand it over to John, who will introduce the rest of these excellent journalists who are sitting here on the stage with him tonight. Thank you again for joining New England Public Radio and the New England News Collaborative this evening. John?
Thank you, Mark. Thanks, Martin, so much. It's good to be here. I live in Connecticut, and I work in a state where people really, really like their public radio, but I always love coming up here where people love their public radio a lot. So thank you for having me. So I'm going to introduce our guests here, and we're going to have a nice open conversation about something that I think a lot of you know an awful lot about. We're going to have questions from the audience, and we encourage this to just be a dialogue, because I think that there's a lot of questions that you may have. There's a lot of questions that these folks may have for each other. So feel free to just jump in the conversation. We've got a couple microphones that we can share and pass around to each other. Let me welcome in Mike Dobbs. He's managing editor at the Reminder Publications, which covers Hampton County and some of Northern Connecticut. He has been there for nearly 20 years. He lives in Springfield, not far from this new casino, and he's reported extensively on the casino saga. Welcome to Mike Dobbs. Next to him is Mark Pasniokas. He's been the Capitol Bureau Chief for the Connecticut Mirror for the past 8-plus years. He's closely covered Connecticut's slow march to a third casino, not far from here, and reported a lot on MGM's efforts to keep that casino from happening. Mark was previously a reporter at the Hartford Courant and is going to be on the radio with me on that other radio station talking about politics tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. I'm Mark Pasniokas. Kristen Palpini is a reporter at the Berkshire Eagle in Pittsfield. She's covered the casino's outreach efforts to Berkshire County and expectations about benefits from the casino. She was previously editor-in-chief of the Valley Advocate and worked at the Daily Hampshire Gazette. Welcome to Kristen. And Rick Hurst is a publisher of a Springfield-based monthly newspaper called An African-American Point of View. Started in 2003. You can find it both in Springfield and Hartford. Rick is a lawyer, previously served on the Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination. Welcome to Rick. So there's a casino opening here in August, from what I hear. It's been a long time in coming, and there have been a few starts and stops along the way, and maybe even a few more before it officially opens. I'm going to start with you, Mike, because you've been following this for a long time. Just tell us how exactly we got to the point where a block or so from here, we're going to have like an actual casino opening in downtown Springfield.
Okay, how much time do we have? Full disclosure, I thoroughly intend to write a book about this when we get done with it, because it's got all the elements that any great bestseller should have. It's got failed expectations, it's got heroes, it's got villains. How did we get here? I think it was the Massachusetts legislature being so green with envy at the money that you folks in Connecticut were getting from two casinos. And finally having the wherewithal to reject their Puritan backbone and embrace yet another vice. I think to a certain extent, the success of the Massachusetts State Lottery, which is the most successful lottery in the United States, helped propel them to consider how can we increase gaming revenue in the Commonwealth, and that this was the thing that should do it. So,
and let me just stop you there. When the Massachusetts legislature first started thinking about this, considering the idea that they could capture some of this money that's being spent in Connecticut right now, when was that first hatched? When did that first come up?
Oh, gee. 20, 30. Well, I can say that in 1996, there was a huge discussion over casino gaming, which absolutely went nowhere. We had a referendum in Springfield that year. It was a non-binding referendum, and that referendum failed, if I remember correctly. People in Springfield did not want casino gaming at the time, but there was a lot of activity about that. So really, there's been discussions about this since the mid-90s.
In the mid-90s, casino gambling in Connecticut was just ramping up. And maybe you could hand it to Mark real quick, because I just wanted to get a little background for this. Around the time that Massachusetts started to get serious about bringing in casinos, though, the slot take that was happening in Connecticut was actually starting to decline. Maybe you can explain a little bit about how the state of Connecticut makes money off casino gambling.
Okay, unlike Massachusetts, the state of Connecticut is really a partner with the two tribes. There are two federally recognized tribes in Connecticut, and under federal law, they have the right to do any form of gambling that the state otherwise allows. And one of the weird things is the hook that allowed the construction of what, for a certain period, seemed to be two of the largest casinos in the world, that hook was charitable gambling. State of Connecticut allowed local parish to do Las Vegas nights. That was enough of a fig leaf or a hook that allowed the two tribes to say, we're going to do casinos. Now, the state of Connecticut did not allow slots, even for charitable gambling. So Lowell Weicker, who was governor in the early 90s, cut a deal with the tribes, which was brilliant because he wanted to both limit gambling and also make some money. So he cut a deal with the tribes. He gave them an exclusivity deal. So in return for exclusivity in Connecticut for all casino gambling, the tribes agreed to give the state 25% of their gross gaming revenue. So that's the gross after you pay off the winners. So over the years, that's been about $7 billion for the state of Connecticut. It reached a high point of $430 million in 2007. Then the recession happened, and then competition happened, and it's been dropping pretty steadily ever since. It's now down to about $270 million, and once this place opens, And when in Everett, Mass. Opens, it's projected to drop probably another $100 million.
So that's a good background. So if you could just hand this back to Mike. So at the time that Massachusetts starts to really get involved in passing legislation to not just build this casino here or in this region, it ends up in Springfield, but also in the eastern part of the state, it's at a time when casino gambling revenues in Connecticut and other places are starting to actually go down. So I'm wondering how that has affected this entire process. The idea that gambling was going to be this panacea was almost passed by the time that they started to think about building one here.
You're making me laugh. This is Massachusetts politics at its finest. The cow isn't just out of the barn. The cow is all the way down the road and probably is a hamburger. The problem that we're facing is during this long and arduous process of getting the legislation written and then selecting how this is going to be done, which community is going to host it, we've seen more casino gaming in the Northeast grow. We've seen it in New York State. We're now talking, they're talking about putting additional casinos closer in New Jersey to New York City. We have seen more activity in Maine. We've seen more activity in Rhode Island. And basically, what they want you to think about is put a map on the wall of the Northeast, put the push pin in the location of the casino, and then draw a circle dictating 100 miles around that, and that is your core audience. Now, I suggest that all of you do that, and you're going to find that, A, you're going to use a lot of pushpins, and B, there's going to be a lot of intersecting circles. So the problem that we're facing here is that we have to have a success down the street. And when I say we, I mean Springfield and Western Massachusetts. We have to have a success. Because if we don't have a success, the implications are pretty grim. So even though I have been criticized by some people for not getting on the bandwagon or drinking the appropriate Kool-Aid, I'm a supporter of MGM because I don't want it to be a black hole that's sucking down progress in my city, and that's what I'm fearful of.
Well, so we'll get to some more history in a bit. Maybe, Rick, you could react to that real quick. I mean, are you drinking the Kool-Aid at all?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I was opposed to the casino from the beginning. And it was not until the vote was taken and casinos were going to come on board, and no matter what, that I got into the ball game and I decided I better check out the candidates. And I studied the casinos real hard, knowing they were coming. And to be honest with you, I studied that there were three that came on board at the beginning. Two of them eventually had to drop out. MGM became the one. And I was on board with MGM by that point because I studied them worldwide. And I mean, MGM was really, really a community-oriented organization. They believed in diversity, and they believed in incorporating themselves into the community in a way that we're beginning to realize right now. So I'm on board. I do think that it will work. I think it'll work because of the commitment of MGM itself.
Well, to your mind, what does that commitment look like? I mean, what does MGM commit to when it commits to building this big structure in downtown Springfield that's different from another company?
They commit to hire from the community. They commit to present themselves in a way that they're on Main Street and not inside a cave. If you visited Baltimore, you know what I mean by that. I mean, there's a casino. You walk to a casino, you see it, and you got to know what's inside before you go in. MGM has made it a point to build it in a way that you're invited in. As they say, and I believe, They've committed to diversity. I think that was the original point I made. They've committed to diversity in a way you wouldn't believe. They had numbers that they agreed to at the beginning that are substantially higher than they committed to. So I just think we have a good organization, besides the fact that they advertise in our newspaper.
Just, we maybe should have pointed that out at first, right? No, I'm just kidding. Well, but okay, so.
Oh wait, can I disagree?
No, please, absolutely, please disagree. Take grab that microphone. This is what it's here for.
Okay, so I've got to disagree a little bit. I don't know that MGM is working in the best interest of Springfield all the time. They have things like on-street entrances to restaurants, which is something that just about no casino has. So it's planning to draw people not just for the casinos, but for the restaurants. I haven't really seen, they just started to release where they're going to have big performances. I think it's Aaron Lewis in Symphony Hall and Stevie Wonder. Yes. But
see, they're not so bad now, are they? They
well,
bring in Stevie Wonder.
Yeah, I guess that is pretty cool. But they also haven't done a lot of contracts, at least not that we've seen yet. They said they would commit to working with local companies and doing deals with local companies. And other than Berkshire Brewing Company and Berkshire Distilleries in Sheffield, I haven't seen anything, and we're pretty close.
But when you talk about these storefront, well, actually, keep the microphone, Kristen, real quick. When you talk about these storefront restaurants, that's one of the things that always is considered whenever there's an urban casino built. There's two different models, right? There's the model where it's a big box in the middle of a town. You drive into a parking lot. You don't see anything about what's going on the street. And you go inside. There's no clocks. There's no windows. You leave. They've got your money. You didn't spend any other money in Springfield. At least if there's storefronts, there's ways to connect with the downtown. Doesn't that make it a part of the city?
Well, it's already a part of the city because it's in the downtown. But I think it starts drawing from the people who would be going to La Fiorentina or Red Rose. You know, now they're going to see another restaurant door open, and they don't have to go through the hassle of getting into a casino to go there. So I think that will draw away from folks.
Mike, what do you think about that? I mean, the way that this place is being built, is this in the best interest of downtown Springfield?
The best interest of downtown Springfield.
Is it in the interest of downtown Springfield?
All I know is that I had a conversation with one restaurant owner who was completely and totally fearful of the impact. He was very concerned about his seasoned, experienced staff being hired by MGM. He was concerned that there would be such a curiosity factor, at least for a year to 2 years, that he said he was preparing for a two-year drought. That's how he put it, those phrase, two-year drought. MGM has invested in something called The Loop. For 1 year, they're going to have a PVTA bus that is basically going to connect the Basketball Hall of Fame to Union Station to the Quadrangle to their property, with the idea that it's going to be a free bus so that people who visit the casino who have heard about other restaurants or other opportunities for tourism, such as the Quadrangle or the Basketball Hall of Fame, can get on a free bus, go and experience those, and then if they're staying at MGM, will come back to their hotel. So they have said all along that they want an inside-out casino that will be part of downtown. So you're walking down the street, and you're on your way to Milano's to get a sandwich. And if you're from Springfield, you know where Milano's is down the street in the South End, and they make excellent sandwiches. So MGM is supposed to be part of the downtown landscape, and it's supposed to be, that's how it's going to look and that's how it's going to feel, that it's part of the downtown. Their use of existing buildings, the fact that they have maintained facades of buildings that they took over are all part of that idea. Am I hoping it works? Yes, I am hoping it works. I'm hoping that somebody who goes to MGM who decides they want some really good barbecue, we'll go to Theodore's. We'll get on the Loop bus and go to Theodore's. I'm hoping that they go to Chef Wayne's Big Mamou. I'm hoping that there's this cross-pollination. That's what we're talking about, and that's what the hope is.
So but we're going to come back to the impact in downtown Springfield, and I want to hear from you, Kristen, in just a bit about the impact in that 100-mile radius, right? What happens in further western Massachusetts? But Mark Pazniokas, there is this little issue of just down the street, South Windsor, Connecticut.
East
Windsor, Connecticut. I'm sorry. There's so many Windsors. East Windsor, Connecticut. You drive by it on the way up here. It's a site that has a former movie theater on it. It has been relatively abandoned. East Windsor is a fairly small town, about 12,000 people or so. And this is the spot where the two existing tribes you were talking about before are working with the state to build a casino to keep gamblers from coming up here. How's that supposed to work?
MGM's marketing model includes drawing a lot of gamblers from the I-91 corridor, Hartford on up. Mike's absolutely right. These casinos talk in terms of 100-mile markets and then secondary markets where you go out 200 miles. So the impetus for the East Windsor Casino, which is going to be smaller than the two big tribal casinos in eastern Connecticut, was simply to, out of convenience, offer a casino that people are literally going to be driving by. This is on a site on a hill overlooking I-91.
It's like, I'm driving to Springfield to go to the MGM casino. I'm like, hold it. There's a casino right there. I could just stop in East Windsor.
Well,
is that
not,
like, literally
not the,
what they're thinking?
Not the first time, because Springfield's going to be a fuller resort. It's going to be a resort casino. It's going to be more to see. People will go. But there were a couple thoughts. One thing that I should mention, even though this is casino expansion in Connecticut, first off, whether it actually ever happens is still in doubt because of some actions or inactions by the Trump administration, as well as a lawsuit that is sure to come from MGM. So it could be quite a while. But this was not an expansion of the casino market. What MGM is doing in Springfield is expanding the market. Some of it will rely on new gamblers. There's a professor named Clyde, honest to God, Clyde Barrow. Any Bonnie and Clyde? This guy's name is Clyde Barrow. And he is really one of the preeminent academics who studies marketing and everything. And even though he's been a consultant to the tribes, MGM agrees with a lot of his findings about the basics of the economics. So you've got a market here that they're going to expand. It's going to be new, but they're going to grab maybe 40% of their customers are going to be gamblers in Connecticut. So Connecticut, again, remember, they're partners with the tribes. They're not just regulators. They said, okay, we're going to cut a deal. We will allow you to build this satellite casino. It's not going to stop MGM, but it's to blunt the loss of gamblers to Springfield after a while. It's also why MGM has fought tooth and nail to kill that thing, lobbying in Washington with the Trump administration. You know, there were the previous administration, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, had basically given advice letters to the tribe saying there wouldn't be any problem in amending the agreements the state has with the tribes to allow this. There was a meeting at the White House, and all of a sudden, a new letter goes out, they just refused to act on amendments to the gaming compact and agreements that the tribes need to get approved before they can go forward in East Windsor. So there's a lot of money on the table. MGM is a very astute company. I agreed with actually what you guys were saying. I mean, from what I have learned about them in reporting and talking to them, they are really sharp operators. They play hardball lobbying, but so do the tribes. Folks, it's all about money. When there's money, there's a lot of lobbying juice, a lot of political juice that is expended trying to fight this stuff. So that's what's been going on, and that's what's going to continue to go on, because the East Windsor thing will depress the returns in Springfield. I don't think it's going to jeopardize the success, but it will depress profits, and MGM is hell-bent on killing that thing in East Windsor.
Kristen, what about the impacts to the rest of the region? You cover Berkshire County, and I'm wondering how people in the rest of the state feel, but also, as we were talking before, towns like Northampton that have thriving nightlife scenes that are bringing in acts all the time, are they feeling as though a casino in Springfield is just going to bring more life and vitality to this region, potentially more people to spend money in the Berkshires and in the Valley, or is this going to compete with the existing infrastructure they already have?
So
So the hope is that it's a lot of cross-pollination, and MGM was talking about bringing some of their big spenders up to the Berkshires for a nice weekend or something like that. But there's also a lot of concern. Northampton, for one, is very concerned about how this might take people away from their nightlife. I don't see that happening as much. MGM's going to get big name acts. Northampton's a little more offbeat and further away. So I don't think it's going to be an impact. The state didn't think it was going to be an impact when Northampton applied for impact fees. But we'll see. But other places, performing arts spaces in particular, are concerned about having MGM come to town because of how much money they have, and they'll be hiring big national acts and being able to pay top dollar for that, and in some cases give away tickets. The nonprofits, Mahewi, Academy of Arts, they can't compete with that. So there's some concern there, but the Massachusetts Cultural Council is actually trying to do a little impact help for these performing arts spaces. I don't know how much that's going to be. I don't know how much it's going to help, but people are hopeful.
So Rick, do you think that this is something that ends up helping Springfield, a city that, you know, needs a boost in its downtown and could certainly use, in your mind, something like this, but maybe it's good for the rest of the region? I mean, I don't know. I mean, do you think that this is going to have an impact beyond the city?
I think it's going to have an impact beyond the city, but I think it's naive to think that MGM is not going to draw away from the rest of the region, especially culturally. There's no way they can't do that. There's going to be competition, and all we can hope for is that it's healthy competition. Maybe MGM would be a stimulus to help everybody grow a little bit. But we in Springfield, and I just have to be honest about it, we're more concerned about Springfield than we are about the region. We've been way, way down. Our economy has gone down. Main Street has gone down. All this talk about restaurants being hurt by MGM is, to me, a lot of nonsense, because downtown has been in decline for a long time. MGM may bring a new vitality. That's what we're hoping for. But the idea that it's not going to compete against the region is nonsense. It's going to compete against the region. Maybe it's good competition.
Do you think that it ends up bringing people into Springfield and thinking about the city of Springfield differently than they have over the course of the last several decades?
I think over time that will happen. It'll take a while. It's when the myth of all this violence of Springfield goes away, and I think MGM can do a lot to make that happen. I think it will bring people into Springfield. I mean, you know, there are not a lot of people in Springfield who go out to the Berkshires. I mean, let's be honest about it. Maybe from Long Meadow, but people in Springfield don't go out to the Berkshires. We'd be very happy to bring the people from Berkshires into Springfield and MGM to help make it successful. That's what we're hoping. I'm sorry.
So Mike, talk a little bit about the economics of this. If the city of Springfield has some short-term gains, certainly from hiring, construction, you see more people coming in because they're going to spend money at the casino. Do you see a plan long-term for this being the future of the city of Springfield, turning things around, making people think about the community differently, bringing in jobs of other sorts here? Because one of the worries people always have about casino gambling is that it's great in and of itself in terms of bringing in nightlife and vitality and maybe some dollars, but it doesn't necessarily cross-pollinate with biotech. It doesn't necessarily cross-pollinate with some other growth areas that any urban community in America might be wanting to see more of.
Okay, so I've been excited about two economic development issues a little bit more than the casino. No offense. The first one that I was very excited about, although it still weirds me out, is the Chinese rail car company. And the reason I'm excited about that, it is providing middle-class union jobs. I get weirded out seeing the communist Chinese flag flying in Springfield, Massachusetts, folks. That's what weirds me out. But the fact of the matter is that Springfield's history is one of an industrial manufacturing community, and the Chinese have brought this back. largely thanks to former Governor Deval Patrick, who basically said, put this in Springfield. I'm excited about that because there's a spillover there for manufacturing jobs in our precision manufacturing sector. I'm also excited about the fact, despite the fact they don't have restrooms on the trains, I'm excited about the new extension of the commuter line from Hartford, because next year at this time, that commuter line is going to extend to Greenfield. So you can get on a train in Greenfield.
It's blinking at me. Okay, we're gonna switch this mic out. Maybe we'll get some more batteries for that mic.
You can get on a train in Greenfield and go all the way to New Haven. And in New Haven, you can take another train and take it into New York City. I think this is very exciting from an economic development point of view. Those are the things that I think really, in the long term, are going to help. In the short term, we have to have, and I don't know if this exists or not, we have to have a comprehensive marketing plan. So it's just not coming to the casino. Just don't come to the casino. You're coming here because of the Dr. Seuss Museum. You're coming here because you want to see the birthplace of the American Constitution, which is the Armory Museum. You know, we have to coordinate with bus companies when they load the senior citizens into the buses to bring them up to freaking Yankee Candle that they stop at MGM. Okay? I mean, we have to have a comprehensive marketing plan to fully exploit all the things that are in this area, and I'm hoping that is getting done. But in the meantime, I'm really excited about the idea that you could be in the precision manufacturing sector and have a future.
I just, since you brought up the trains, though, I just want to quickly ask Mark, there is some irony, though, to the fact that this past week, this Hartford line just opened up, rail service, New Haven, Hartford, Springfield, all points in between, commuter rail service for the first time in several decades. It's going to be a low-cost way to get back and forth between these cities. And people have been saying to me, why do you want to go from Springfield to New Haven? Why do you want to go from Hartford to New Haven? What does that actually matter? Well, Connecticut has helped to build a rail line to take people directly to the out-of-town casino. Nice work, Connecticut.
We've been taking your money for 25 years. It's okay.
We can give a little bit back, right?
But actually, that was the point I wanted to make. You know, when you talk about will it hurt other restaurants and whatnot, and I do want to see the tour where you go to the casino and then the Dr. Seuss Museum. That'll be an interesting combo.
I'll take you on.
Okay. You know, basic economics, right? I mean, you're talking discretionary spending. Connecticut did really well for a long time because there was a lot of outside money coming into Connecticut from Massachusetts and from New York. And so it didn't kill restaurants all around because there was a lot of new money. But we are now in a gambling economy where it's not mature yet, but it's getting there. So at some point, it's all discretionary money. It's going to be a pie that is finite, and you can only cut it up so many ways. So if MGM's slice is huge, the local restaurant guy, it's going to be smaller. That's just basic economics. You all have what you spend in discretionary spending, going out to the movies, going out to dinner, and if suddenly...
Supporting public radio.
And supporting public radio. But if all of a sudden, you know, you're dropping $150 every other weekend at the casino, that's going to cut into what you spend elsewhere. That's just basic economics.
That, you've provided a segue for me, and I want to hear from Kristen and
we
Rick.
We did not even rehearse this.
Yeah. So here we go. Part of the thing about gambling is it's fun, it's entertainment, but it's also you putting your money into a slot machine and knowing that 60% of the time, like, they're getting all the money and you're getting nothing. So how
their,
is
their
that?
Their hold is only about 8%.
Okay, well,
so they're don't worry, they'll get it. But that way, they will get your money eventually. But it is
they will get your money eventually. I'm just saying, over the long period of time, The house always wins by a certain percentage. And I guess I'm wondering how that's factored into the conversations you're having, Kristen, with people, and you're having with people, Rick. The fact is that this is an economy that is built on, you know, taking people's money. A lot of people say that's not necessarily the way to build an economy.
So I have to agree with that. It's not a great way to build an economy. But I really haven't heard much And maybe in Springfield it's different, but I haven't heard much outside of Springfield from folks who are interested in getting in front of what could be increases in gambling problems. Maybe I'm just naive, but I've been looking and I haven't heard anything. How about inside Springfield?
Yeah, I'd love to hear about this, Rick. What do you think about this issue?
Where do I start?
Yeah.
You know, people who are going to gamble, and they're going to find a way. And this idea that casinos are going to increase problem gamblers, I just don't buy it. What I do know is that it doesn't always take money out of the community. I want to just give you a little history. The numbers game. Do you remember the numbers game, folks? This was the illegal numbers game that sometimes the mafia ran it. But there are a lot of people in the community who were employed by that numbers game. They played the numbers every day. And at some point in time, the number would come out. I don't know where it came from, but all I know is I heard the folks say the number is. The number would come out, and somebody in the community would win. But other people who were working on the numbers, collecting the numbers, delivering them to wherever they had to go, they were making money. There was an underground economy in the community. I don't mean just the minority community. I mean in many, many communities, there was an underground economy. So people were making money off the gambling, as well as they'd win some. But, of course, the money was also taken out. Then the lottery came around. When the lottery came along, it destroyed the underground economy. And the people who were making money off of the numbers game stopped making money. And it was a very important source of income for the inner city community. Now, MGM is coming in. Well, with MGM, they're hiring 3,000 people. They're taking people from the community. We're making money again. So, yes, we're still gambling, but we're making money. I see it as a more positive thing than even the lottery.
But you can't discount the fact that for a certain segment of the population, problem gambling is real. It's an addiction. It's a problem, and exacerbated by the easy access to it. One thing you guys have had here in Massachusetts for a while is Keno.
I have people who are very close to me who have gambling addictions. And when it's no different from alcoholism or other kinds of addictions. And that's a fact. And I'm glad that MGM is doing something to deal with that. But MGM is not going to increase that. These are people who have their problems long before MGM came along. Once MGM comes along, develop a gambling addiction, they would develop it anyway. Sports gambling is on the way in.
I'm asking the bigger picture question, though, Rick. And this is the thing: sports gambling's coming.
That's right.
And you've got casinos, and you've got Keno, and you've got the lottery, and everything else. The question is: we're building a tax base off of people's gambling habits. Like, we're actually saying that a certain amount of the money that we're going to get to support public services in Springfield, public services in Massachusetts or Connecticut, are coming directly from people scratching off a ticket or pulling a handle. And I guess I'm wondering if that's the way to balance our economy.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
But that's what we do.
We could do this all night. But should we?
You know, I've lived too long to deal with that one. We are.
You're 30 years too late with this question.
That's, I agree.
Well, I was asking it 25 years ago. I guess I was 5 years too late. I don't know.
There's an old joke. It's an off-color joke, which I won't tell.
Oh, the other microphone. We're just going to pass this thing around. This is.
No, this works.
No, it doesn't work. There you go. It doesn't. This is great.
But, you know,
you have to swing
the punchline of the joke is, you know, we've established what you are. Now we're haggling over price. So, you know the joke.
No, I'm an old reporter, so I get where you're going with that.
But see me later. I'll tell you the joke. Now the joke is, a guy goes up to a young lady in a bar and said, "Would you sleep with me for $1 million?" And it's like, oh, All right. Well, you sleep with me for $50. No, what do you think I am? Well, we established what you are. Now we're haggling over price. That's the joke.
So that's the
joke. But my point with the gambling is it is ubiquitous. And I don't say that as somebody who says this is good, that you shouldn't spend a lot of time and effort on helping people who are going to develop problem gambling problems. That's a redundancy. I pulled out my phone because if you want to place a bet on whether or not Andrew Benintendi is going to hit a home run in the seventh inning, you can do it on your phone. You can go to a site called Five Dimes. You can go to a site called Unibet. It's here. It's not legal. It's a gray market, but they will take your bets on your phone any time of the day and night. In Connecticut, the sports betting market right now is estimated about $600 million. So sports betting, that's why there's been this incredibly fast acceptance now that the Supreme Court has said Nevada no longer has exclusive rights to sports books, because everybody's figured out that it's there. So the question is, right now it's unregulated, it's untaxed. So that's why all these states very quickly are going to adopt.
It's, yeah, unregulated, untaxed, but, the numbers game was, and people are making money at it.
But to her point, that doesn't mean it's like, oh, well, because there will be casualties. There will be lives destroyed. So any community that welcomes legalized gaming, whether it's casinos or sports betting, had damn well better finance these groups that help these folks, because they're there, and there will be more of them once this casino opens down the street. That's just the track record anywhere casino gambling has gone, anywhere sports gambling has gone. That's how it works.
Mike?
I just want to bring up another vice, which is impending, and that's legalized recreational marijuana. And you see, Governor Baker was in town a Saturday ago talking about cultural grants, and that was great. And unfortunately, he gave reporters three questions, and I was the fourth guy, so I didn't get my question. My question to the governor was, how's the state of Massachusetts going to handle marijuana tourism? Take a look at Colorado. They've done pretty damn well with marijuana tourism. So here we go with MGM being this draw for people from out of the state, and I'm thinking some enterprising gentleman in Springfield, in fact I know who it is because I'm friends with him, would like to do a cannabis lounge. Why not? You're coming to MGM, you're having a good time. What can't MGM give to you as part of their entertainment and hospitality package? Well, I don't think they're going to have a cannabis lounge in MGM. I may be wrong. Who knows? But the fact of the matter is, we now have to, as we're grasping with gambling, we're going to be grasping with another kind of quote-unquote vice that is going to draw people into Massachusetts. And we got to be prepared for this. And I find it sort of humorous, because this gets back to your question about we're building this tax base on gambling. Well, we're going to build another tax base on the legal sale of marijuana, which some people are horrified by and other people embrace. And all the people in towns like East Long Meadow and Wilbraham who have said we're not going to have recreational marijuana stores in our town, of course, are going to be coming to Springfield, Chicopee, and Holyoke to buy their pot. And you know that's the way it's going to go. The word hypocrite should be inserted in here someplace. But the bottom line is that here's a whole nother layer to this issue that you brought up, John.
Yeah. Did you want to jump in? We'll hand the microphone down to Rick. And we're going to get some of your questions here in a second and see if we just are just going to raise hands and yell out. But go ahead.
I just wanted to bring out the point that, you know, in the process, you're going to destroy another underground economy.
Only if the recreational stores are selling it at a higher rate than the guy on the street corner.
So let's take some questions from the audience. And I don't know that second microphone's working, so here's what we're going to do. We've got hands raised, so I've got a hand back there. Why don't you stand up, sir? Why don't you just give me your name and what's your question? And yell it out loud.
Okay. Hello?
Yes. We have a lot of our local and state politicians
have been co-opted during this last five-year process. And even some of our local press, I was disappointed to hear Mr. Hearst's position, but I was really disappointed last month when Channel 40 Western Mass News announced that they're going to have a studio on premise, so they're essentially becoming the marketing PR division of the casino. And this distresses me and undermining democracy. So let these casinos have so much clout. They've already extended the liquor hours to 4 a.m. What's to stop them from getting the liquor, the gambling age reduced to 18 to tap in the hundreds of thousands of college students that we have in Massachusetts? And is the legislature going to stop that? That's my concern.
Sir, can I just ask you a follow-up question, though? You talk about undermining democracy, though. I mean, the Massachusetts state legislature has given the go-ahead for these casinos. They've gone through a series of different votes at the local and the state level. I mean, we may agree, and you may disagree with other folks, but what about that is undermining democracy? If indeed the Massachusetts legislature is saying, this is what we're going to have in Springfield, and the people of Springfield have essentially said, yeah, we want it here. Grab a microphone. I would love to hear from you. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, the casino ballot question in Springfield, you know, it was like 2,000 people who voted to bring a casino to Springfield. That's a bigger problem in the city, right? That we have really, really low voter turnout. But it's not really accurate to say that the people of Springfield came out and said, build us a casino. A few people showed up to vote that day, right?
So could we get a couple? Go ahead, Mark, real quick, but I'd like to hear from Mike and this too. Go ahead.
But I mean, to the gentleman's question about, you know, liquor sales at 4 in the morning, I'll tell you what stopped it in Connecticut. When a casino patron drove the wrong way on the highway and killed a van load of kids leaving on a mission trip. That's when Connecticut flipped the rule on whether you could drink all night at the casino. Hopefully you don't have that experience here, but it'll be something like that. These laws will be reexamined. These rules will, I'm sure, there's going to be an endless debate over things like how long into the night you can serve booze.
So the democratic process question, Mike, to you and then to Rick, I really want to hear your perspective on this. We have people saying, this isn't really what we want here, but then, I mean, there's a question of, well, we've been through a very long process. I mean, do you think that we're undermining the democratic process in forcing this casino through?
The member of the audience who was referring to low voter turnout, yes, we have a problem with that in Springfield. And you have a problem with that in East Longmeadow. And you have a problem with that in Holyoke, in Chicopee.
In Hartford.
And nearly any either suburban or urban center, you can talk about that as a problem. Whether good or bad, the majority of those people who voted in that election voted for the casino. Yes, you can argue it was a slender margin of the overall voting populace. This has been an arduous process. There has been a lot of public input into it. And just to address the idea of the 4 a.m., I want to remind people that the Mass Gaming Commission has not yet authorized MGM to have liquor sales until 4 a.m. And they are only going to extend alcohol privileges from 2 to 4 for people who are actually gaming. So you cannot just go and drink till 4. There's a lot of concern about that. I understand that. It is not a done deal at this point. The Gaming Commission still has to make that decision. And I'm sure they're going to hear testimony from what has happened in Connecticut for that purpose. I really think that this has been perhaps, I'll get into trouble for this. I think this has probably been as open a process for a billion-dollar business that we could possibly expect in the city of Springfield, to be perfectly frank. We have a casino oversight committee at the city council that meets on a regular basis and grills those guys pretty thoroughly. There is a lot of people who are watching them very carefully and wanting them to live up to every measure of the host community agreement.
Rick wanted to jump in on this question.
He actually took my point away from me.
I'm sorry.
But you're a good man.
You're
the only point he didn't make is that I think 8% of the voters voted in this last Springfield election. And that's not unusual. But the point he did make is the decision not to vote is a democratic election, too. When you decide you don't want to vote, then you're making a decision. And so the fact that 92% of the electorate didn't vote in this last election means that they elected not to make a choice.
Hmm. Vanessa, did you have a follow-up very quickly, and then we're going to get a question here? Go ahead, sir. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd just like to mention that in the citywide referendum, the casino had a $15 million budget. The opponents had a $2,000 budget. So there was a big, big uneven playing field from the get-go. And that's, again, raised, you know, the bigger issue about money in politics. But it was not really a fair, and there was never a public forum with a pro and con discussion, because the casino people refused to take part in any type of forum where they would have any opponents on the same stage.
We have a couple hands down over here, and Vanessa will get to someone here in just a second. You're saying, real quick, Rick, you're saying that's not true?
It's just not true. I mean, the Springfield folks were very, very much involved in the entire process. And I was against the casino, and I voted against it. It was only after it came on board that I began to support it, because it's here. But, I mean, MGM was very, very much involved in getting people involved. I remember that precisely.
Hi, go ahead. What's your name?
My name is Markel. I'm not a hypocrite. I'm carrying this bag. It says Mohegan Sun. I want to tell you, I was against the casino over here in Springfield from the get go. Let me tell you something. When the referendum went out, they had these posters around the city. It said yes means no and no means yes. It was the biggest confusion in the history of this city. When the people went out to vote, they didn't know what they were voting for. When you went into the voting booth, you the other side, the pro casino, there was very little opposition. People, they had everything going against them for them. They had this downtown. They wanted to build this high rise, this big 26-story big building. They went through neighborhood, telling the people, this is going to be the new paradigm for Springfield. This is going to be in this fake, phony economy that's going to collapse next year, and telling the people that Springfield, this is going to be the new Jesus coming to Springfield. This is going to solve all the problems for Springfield. This is going to change the whole new. This is going to be the new Jerusalem for Springfield. This is a poor city. Right up, just a few blocks up the street, people are getting evicted. I'm from an organization called Rise for Social Justice. The rents are going up. There's an office up the street. People come in our office that being evicted. Now the rents are going up. There were 3 months ago, the rents were $700 a month. Now they're being evicted. The other day, they come in our office. We're being evicted because the casino was coming in. They're kicking us out. The same people who voted for the casino, now their rents are going up to $900 a month. A two-bedroom apartment is now $900 a month.
Well, so first of all, you gave us a lot to talk about, and I want to actually get a couple different thoughts on this. So we have
opposition.
Yeah.
They said there was going to be this 26-story.
First of all, but I want to ask about those two questions. So there's the two things, right? There's what they promised. There's the 26-story tower. This is a big change, and so that's one part of this entire equation. I don't know if you want to speak to this, Kristen.
I wanted to talk about the rent. Actually,
so
before coming here, I did some research because I had been hearing from homeowners and renters about the changes in the rents and what they're being assessed. And the values of properties in Springfield went up 8% like overnight. And that's putting a lot of stress on people who have to pay their bills. I don't know if that's the casino, but it's happening right now.
That's an important part of this economy, too.
He's absolutely right on that point. And once we voted to have the casino, that was going to happen. Not only that, you're bringing in a lot of high paid.
This is a poor city.
Yeah. And you're. Exactly.
Just give Rick 1 second, sir, just so we can answer the question.
You're bringing in a lot of high-paid professionals who are going to drive the prices up. And if the economy keeps improving the way it is, gentrification, which I've talked about it on my newspaper for many, many years, gentrification is going to happen. And the prices of the rental prices are going to go up. And that's something that I think is a tragedy, but I don't know what you do about it. It's happened all around the country, gentrification. I don't know what you do about it. But your point is well taken. That's going to happen, and it is happening.
Yeah.
And people, they get their welfare checks. They say, I was walking down the street the other day. I heard people say, I can't wait for that to come down.
Yeah.
The first thing they're going to do is run down there that pull us up.
And sir, thank you. I wonder, Mike, could you just address his other point about what the casino kind of promised to build, how that changed midterm, and I know you probably want to get to some of his other points, but could you just address that point of, like, we're going to get a big tower and one sort of footprint, and it changed a lot over time?
Well, we were supposed to have this 26-story tower of steel and glass, so you could see this edifice from 91, and it would be very distinctive. MGM suffered a huge issue when suddenly casino gaming went onto a statewide referendum. That delayed the whole idea of building this casino. And then they came back with the concept that this was now financially infeasible because during this lapse, basically prices had gone up of steel and glass. What they came up with was an alternative that allowed them to actually have, I think it was 5 or 6 more hotel rooms, and it would have not a skyline effect of a tower, but instead it would actually look like part of downtown. Me personally, I didn't find that this was any big issue one way or the other. Downtown Springfield, if you know anything about our topography and geology, we're a swamp. We have a very high water table, and it's not like Manhattan where you can put skyscrapers in and you hit rock. You have to dig down a long way before you get the support that you really need for something like that. So we still have the same number of hotel rooms. We don't have this iconic thing that people can see from the highway. Personally, I live in Maple High Six Corners. I live off of Central Street. I've been there since 1990. That is not a ritzy neighborhood. It's a working class, working poor neighborhood. My house is 1.2 miles from the casino, sir. And I'm very concerned about how it's going to affect real estate values in my neighborhood because we're so close. If you go online and you start looking at reports about casinos and their impact on real estate, it's different in almost every community. In other words, you can't predict it. You don't know if my house is going to be worth more because it's so close to MGM, or if my house is going to be worth less because it's close to MGM. Only time will tell. I understand what Rick is saying about gentrification. This is a double-edged sword. On one hand, we want more market-rate housing closer to downtown. On the other hand, we don't want to displace people of a limited economic means from their homes. It's a real problem that's going to go on.
Who's got a question? Hi, I'll go to you first, and you, sir. Hi there, what's your name?
Tim. My question is, there are two ways to express the revenue that the state and the city will receive from the casino. One is as a flat dollar rate and the other one is a percentage. And I'm wondering if you could, the panel, could express their opinion on how expressing the revenue as a flat dollar amount sounds more than expressing it as a percentage.
Rick, you want to do that one first? No, thanks.
Go ahead, Mike.
Did you have a question? Okay, I'm going to give it to Kristen and see what her explanation is. Maybe we can help you out.
Okay, I don't totally have an explanation about that, but I do know that Springfield in the first year is going to get about $25 million from the casino, and I'd be very curious if anybody up here knows how that's going to be spent, because I'm not sure.
We would like to know.
Okay, you do understand that the casino does not pay property taxes. The casino has a different kind of structure in terms of how the Sarno administration negotiated with them. So on one hand, it sort of guarantees us the same amount of money every year. On the other hand, it denies us the ability to get more money out of them, and it's a 40-year deal. So, you know, not to be indelicate, but there's a number of us gray hairs who are going to be doing the dirt sleep by the time MGM is done and is done with its 40-year deal. So maybe you'll live forever. I don't know. But the bottom line is that it's not like other businesses with the way this was structured. I don't think I can accurately answer your question about percentage or flat, but Kristen is right. There's a $25 million payment to the city. How that is going to be used will be very interesting, because I do not think that the Sarno administration has done a real specific breakdown of where that's going to go.
So shouldn't we, like, you know, have that? Like, shouldn't we know how the city of Springfield is going to invest this $25 million that people have said that they want to get from the casino?
Why, sure, John. And if there was a member of the city council in here, maybe they could even address that. But at this point, I don't think we really know.
It goes into the general fund, doesn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
So okay. Hi, sir. What's your name? You have a question?
My name's Bob, and my question is do you have any information on how casinos have helped convention business in cities? Because certainly the Mass Mutual Center has underperformed in that aspect ever since it was enlarged by the Commonwealth.
That's a good question. I don't know, Paz, can you talk a little bit about the impact of the existing tribal casinos in southeastern Connecticut? Because it is fairly substantial.
I'm laughing because the last convention I attended at one of the casinos was the Republican State Convention. For the last two election cycles, Republicans in Connecticut have nominated their candidates in a casino.
There's a sort of honesty there.
There is. The casinos offer—they compete with the other convention centers. That's the problem. They tend to be loss leaders. The casino business is to get people in their complexes. And once they're there, the assumption is a certain percentage will gamble. So in Connecticut, there have been tensions between, and Kristen touched on it earlier about the performing spaces. It's the same dynamic. You know, there's only so much of a market. Now, with conventions, it's a little bit different because you can attract national business. So it's been a mixed deal in Connecticut. Some of the business, there's a big convention center in downtown Hartford. The question is, have they lost business to the casinos? I'm not sure how much synergy there is, because once you go to these places, you tend to stay there.
But the reality is, to Kristen's earlier point, an awful lot of business in terms of big ticket concerts have gone to Mohegan Sun and Foxwoods, away from Hartford and the aging, decrepit, falling down XL Center. If anybody's concerned about anything in Springfield that's not working.
Springsteen still plays there, so you watch your mouth.
Well, I'm just saying.
He also did Mohegan Sun.
And hand the microphone to Rick, but to the people of Springfield who worry about broken down infrastructure, Hartford has a lot of it, and they've lost an awful lot of their business to the casino in southeastern Connecticut. Rick?
I was referring to the convention center issue.
Yeah.
And Springfield, MGM, manages the Mass Mutual Center. And so we don't have to worry about whether or not they're going to compete with it. I mean, they actually are going to support it. And I think that it might bring the Mass Mutual Center back.
Mm. Oh, we got a question. Hi, what's your name?
Hi, my name is Ahmad. As you know, I'm a very pretty political person. My first point was, I think I may not necessarily have been necessarily a pro-gambling person, but I will say that MGM ran one of the most inclusive campaigns I've ever seen from a politician or an initiative, including supporting people of color, hiring people of color, working with the LGBT community, and whether or not we can have a debate about whether the turnout was appropriate, I think that they took it very seriously to try to include people. And I, for one, who might not necessarily have been a fan of gambling, was quite impressed that they tried so hard to be multilingual, multi-inclusive, and bring various people together. And I think that is important as a model for every kind of campaign moving forward, that whether you like them or not, that they actually talk to or attempt to talk to everybody. My question is, casinos can't be a panacea. We've already seen this across the country. We know that the data does that. So what is the articulated economic development vision outside the casino coming in August for Springfield and the larger Hampton County regionalized area? And have they been able to articulate that outside of PVPC? What does it look like for Springfield August 24th for us to look at things like small business or transportation or microgrids or environmental 21st century infrastructure? And can any of, and not that you have the answers, maybe the elected officials or the city folks might be better, but I just want to know, what is our vision outside of sports gambling or casino gambling to help revitalize a community that many of people have articulated some of its challenges?
It's a great question.
I don't know. No, I, you know, I can only give a general statement. I'm not a politician. I'm not in government. But I do think that both in the region and in Springfield, people are giving a lot of thought to the future. And things have begun to change. We have a couple of fantastic new industries right here in Springfield. Mike already mentioned the railroad company, and people are really looking ahead. I don't know what that's about because I'm not involved in the economics of it all, but I know that people's minds are on regional development and Springfield development. I don't think anybody believes that the casino is the end all of it all, because if the casino was the end all, then Springfield is doomed, and I think everybody knows that. So that's all I can say. None of us are concentrated on this casino as being the answer. We weren't concentrated on casino being the answer before the casino became an idea. We've always struggled. We have regional organizations that have been doing an awful lot of things. This whole business with the commuter train to Hartford, New Haven, and the idea going from east to west, this is all part of the idea that we have to figure out a way to make economic development in Springfield and the region viable. So we're thinking about it that way. We know that the casino is not going to make it happen. The casino is one piece.
Mm. Hi, ma'am. What's your name?
Betsy, and I actually live just downtown, so in the real catchment area of this. My neighbors were all for this, partly because they saw no one else was going to put $1 billion in downtown Springfield, and because MGA, it's not been mentioned, their whole enterprise is only 38% gambling. There's a lot of other entertainment, restaurants, bowling alley, movie theater activities that are associated with this, and are particularly pleased with the fact that it is integrated within the downtown facade and not a 26 standalone tower. And picking up on the last question, it is why, along with the MGM development, you've had Mass Development has had one of its fellows working in the Stern Square, Worthington Street area, working directly to revive other restaurants simultaneously, and really looking at a whole downtown plan. I agree that we do need to think more long-range about how we're going to balance housing prices. We haven't really seen the increase yet in our neighborhood, but who knows?
I'm wondering, Kristen, do you have a thought on that, though, to the about the long-term economic development of this? I mean, do you think that this is something that we're putting too much emphasis on this one silver bullet of a casino when there's so many other things that are happening and need to happen within our region?
I think that a lot of attention is being put on the casino right now because it's coming and it's big. But Massachusetts and Western Mass still has a lot going on different. Manufacturing, for one, biotechnology. There's a lot of work going on to bring these kinds of jobs here. So, you know, what it's going to be like in the future, I'm not sure. Hopefully there will be some kind of rail connecting east to west, and hopefully more manufacturing jobs, because the casino jobs in the area tend to be, you know, the more minimum wage jobs, chefs, waitresses, that kind of thing. And that's not going to sustain the economy long term.
Hi there. What's your question? What's your name?
Hi. My name's Alyssa Mazar. I'm from the Social and Economic Impacts of Gambling in Massachusetts Research Study at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. I'm also here with the principal investigator, Dr. Rachel Volberg. So we've been focusing a lot on the economic potential outcomes from MGM. I'm just wondering, we had a brief discussion about potential problem gambling impacts, and we had a discussion to that about kind of more of a broad brush, well, people gamble, they're already gambling. But we know that different gambling formats have different risk profiles, right? So some forms of gambling are riskier than others. So in a casino located in a downtown or an urban setting with a certain economic profile, a certain racial profile, do you guys have any comments on the accessibility to electronic gambling machines or slot machines in an area like Springfield, and whether or not that's going to impact the sort of consequences of hosting a casino in Springfield, Massachusetts?
I mean, I cover a lot of things in Connecticut. The casino issue, casino expansion has been one of them, so I'm not going to hold myself out as an expert on that. I can tell you that, you know, there's a council down there that is tried to do long-term studies, and there is an uptick when it happens. And you're right, different people respond to different stimulants different ways. But, you know, this is a state, like Keno. I don't know what the hell is in the water in Massachusetts, but your Keno numbers are unlike any place else in the United States.
It's such an exciting game.
It took me, when Connecticut got Keno, I was stunned to realize that one of the bars I went into after Red Sox games had Keno. And I had been sitting under those screens for years. I didn't know what the hell it was. But different things are going to hit people different ways. In Connecticut, the biggest growth factor in gambling has been scratch tickets in the Connecticut lottery. The Connecticut lottery brings in more money than the two, well, for the state, than the two casinos. And scratch tickets are a huge part of it. You've seen how they market these things. It's gone from $1 to $2, $5. You could buy a $40 scratch ticket if you want.
Well, okay, you're the expert. Could you stand up? Do you mind? Okay. Hi. Okay, the principal of the city. Hi, Rachel. So you're the expert on this. So talk about that for a second. Paz just mentioned Keno, which is something that's available in Massachusetts and in Connecticut now. It is, from what I know, the little bit that I know, it's a game that is perfectly tuned to get people to sit there and just put their money down over and over and over again, much like some electronic slot machines. So what can you tell us about the specific profile of people who would sit in front of electronic gambling machines, whether or not that provides more or less possibility for problem gambling and long-term problems?
So the
the gambling research field, which I've been in for, I'm sorry to say, over 30 years, looks at different forms of gambling as being more or less risky based on a number of different structural characteristics. It doesn't really have to do with the players. Players or people will choose to participate in one or another forms of gambling based on, you know, their own personal decisions. But what the industry controls and what the regulators are sometimes able to affect are the structural characteristics. So the difference between a slot machine where you can play a new game every 5 seconds and a keno or monitor lottery game where there's a new game every 4 minutes or every 5 minutes is that's one structural characteristic is event frequency. There's other structural characteristics like, you know, speed of return, amount of return on any given bet. That's what's called the house edge. So there's a number of different characteristics of the games that are either inherent in the type of betting or can be controlled by the operator. And those are really what you want to look at in terms of understanding the riskiness of any given form of gambling.
So given that, are you concerned that, as your colleague asked, that a casino coming into an urban area with a low-income profile and characteristic will indeed cause some sort of specific social problems that are attached to the gambling that's available?
Yes, in fact, not only us, but the Gaming Commission as well. The reason that Alyssa and I actually have full-time jobs right now is because we are engaged in running a study that is monitoring the full range of impacts that are expected to arise. Now, that's the economic impacts, which generally early on are very beneficial. You know, tax revenues, new jobs, economic development. But it's also the social impacts, which are much more difficult to quantify, tend to roll out much more slowly over time, but can be extremely devastating, as in the case of a person with a gambling problem. And so the study that we're doing, we're just beginning now to have information about the construction impacts. And you know, we've been doing the study for a number of years, and we've been looking at Plain Ridge Park Casino, the slot parlor, very closely. Later this year, we're going to have our first impact report published, which is going to look mostly at Plainville and the surrounding communities, but also is going to be a report card of all of the impacts that we've observed and looking at some of the similarities and, or more likely, the differences between the communities that have agreed to have casinos come in. So Springfield is very much in our focus, and we're looking at real estate impacts, we're looking at changes in number of businesses, employment rates, all of those economic pieces, but we're also looking in a very targeted way at the population impacts, the gambling behavior, comorbid. People with gambling problems tend to have other kinds of problems as well, mental health problems and physical problems. So we're looking at all of those population effects as well. We're based in a school of public health, so that maybe tells you a little bit where our perspective is.
So we'll have to check back with you and look at more of your findings. We have fact sheets right here, and probably for a lot of you. It's nice, though, that the casino is creating full-time jobs in the research field. We're just about out of time. We're running up against our clock, and I wanted to just get some last words, and thank you for all the great questions. Last words from all of our panelists. You can hand the microphone over to Mike just to give the first last word. And, Mike, so what happens next in your mind? I mean, obviously, this casino is opening in August, but what are the things you're looking at? What are the big questions you want to be asking about what happens next?
Well, what I'd like to see is how quickly casino economic development trickles across the street. So go downtown, go down here, and take a look at the number of vacant retail commercial spaces that's on the other side of Main Street from MGM. So the test is going to be how much money crosses the street. So how many entrepreneurs see an opportunity by being that close to the casino? So that's what I'm going to be watching. And I'm going to run out of here because I got to be in Chicopee in 15 minutes to cover city council. So don't mean to be rude.
Mike Dawes from the Reminder publication. Mike, it's always good to see you. I like this. Everyone gives the last word and then rushes off stage. This is going to be great. So, Paz, here's what I'm going to ask you about. So we know that there's still questions about whether or not this East Windsor Casino is going to get built down the road. There's another question, though, that's really interesting. Whether or not Bridgeport, Connecticut, is in the mix for another casino. Can you just briefly say whether or not another big, struggling city might be able to capture casino gambling in the next couple of years?
All right. The short answer is everybody's been trying to figure out MGM's true intentions about Bridgeport. Was this just a way to garner support in the Connecticut legislature to fight East Windsor, or are they truly interested? They've convinced more and more people that they are interested in Bridgeport, and then they turn around and bought Yonkers Raceway with the Racino. So they just put, I think, $900 million in that, and if New York legalizes full table games, it'll have to kick in another $50 million. So I don't know. I mean, it's a kind of a long conversation, but the short version is the deal that Governor Weicker cut all those years ago with the tribes have really been a break on commercial casinos coming to Connecticut, because the state got all this money from these two tribes. So anybody who came in and wanted to compete, the opening bid had to be, can you make us more money than we're going to lose if we break the exclusivity deal? As the slots revenue from the two tribal casinos drops, that becomes a more reasonable discussion, you know, as it drops below $200 million. So that's a long-winded way to say, I'm not sure.
You're not sure. Mark Pazniokas from the Connecticut Mirror. Thank you so much, Mark. So Kristen, how about you? I mean, what's the next thing you're watching for in all this?
So the next thing I'm watching for in all of this, actually Mike brought it up, but he's gone, is what exactly is going to happen on August 24th when thousands and thousands of people descend on Springfield. From what we understand, it's going to be gridlock. It's going to be crazy. They're expecting, something like, I don't even know. They were saying 25,000, and then they said maybe three times more than that. So it's really hard to say how many people are going to show up. But as a local, I will not be in Springfield on the 24th.
Except on the first day, they don't all arrive at once.
Yeah, that we do know. So Kristen Palpini from the Berkshire Eagle in Pittsfield, thank you so much. Okay, Rick, I'm going to give you the last word. So you weren't so sure about this, and now you seem pretty sure that this is something good. I'm going to ask you, what's the big concern you have? What's the thing you're looking for to make sure that this actually works? Like the thing that's tugging at you a little bit to make sure that this Springfield Casino actually does benefit your city?
Well, the biggest concern I have has been brought up earlier. It's the housing market. A lot of people forget that in New Jersey, Atlantic City, the surrounding communities went down dramatically. I mean, the casinos killed the city. And I'm going to be watching to see what it does here. Big problem is, I mean, I don't want it to kill the housing market, but I don't want it to increase the value so much that people got to move out. And yet I own property, so I want my property values to go up. So I'm just going to be watching this thing with all these competing interests. And that's, I think, what's going to be important. We got to be certain that people aren't run out of the city. I mean, that's the thing that we must make certain of. We know if they're run out of the city, where they're going to run to. I won't go into that level of detail, but we got to make certain it doesn't happen. I give MGM credit because one of the reasons why I was sold on MGM is because the people at the very top told me that they were very much aware of what happened in Atlantic City. And everywhere they go, they make a big effort to make certain that they don't contribute to that kind of problem. And so we've got to yet see if that is, if what they say they're going to do comes true.
Rick Hurst from an African-American point of view, the Springfield-based monthly. Thank you so much, Rick. So thanks to all of you. Thanks to Valley Venture Mentors. A big round of applause for this beautiful space and all the great work that they do. And thanks to my friends at New England Public Radio, one of the really great public radio stations in all of America. I'm very pleased to be working with them, with Martin Miller, with Sam Hudzik, with Vanessa Cirillo, all the people who made this possible. A big round of applause for your local public radio station. Support them. They need to raise money before the end of their fiscal year, coming up at the end of this month. So support them in their fundraiser. Thank you, and thank you for supporting the New England News Collaborative. Drink some more, I think. Have a good night.